Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I have a tiny confession I want to make to you. I still am not sure that I can remember every big play that happened in the Rose Bowl on Monday. I've done like radio interviews and various media appearances since the game, and I'll be asked questions about these pivotal plays in the game. And when I hear the question, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That happened. Oh, yeah, that happened. And you try to piece all this together. I just arrived back as we record this here on Wednesday. I just arrived back into the state of Georgia early on Wednesday morning. So I look, by the way, if you're watching on video, terrible today. I mean, I look absolutely like microwave death. So if you're a radio listener or a podcast listener, you are the lucky one today, because you don't have to see my unshaven face, my sort of unkempt hair. I am kind of a I'm a pretty big mess today, but I'm nonetheless really, really excited about being here on Dog Nation Daily and really kind of looking ahead to the national championship game on Monday against Alabama, continuing to look back to the Rose Bowl victory for Georgia against Oklahoma. When I arrived to my desk here at Dog Nation World Headquarters today, waiting for me right there on my desk, somebody had taken and put this copy of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution with the headline, Comeback Dogs in the 54-48 Final, and the great scene there of Kirby Smart, the Georgia players, with those Dog Nation field editions there on the field and the confetti coming down. And, you know, that was such a cool moment and another great souvenir for me to sort of celebrate that and kind of think back on that. And by the way, when Georgia beat Oklahoma on Monday, apparently it wasn't just Georgia fans that were celebrating. This is actually a little bit of a surprise to me, but I think it sets us up for what a really fun conversation is going to be on the next few days getting ready for the Alabama Crimson Tide, because apparently Alabama fans, upon seeing Georgia win, they were actually a little happier than you might think. Happy even for Georgia, maybe. The SEC Network captured this on video, put it on Twitter. Here are some Alabama fans celebrating Georgia's win by doing what a lot of SEC fans do, giving you the SEC chant here. Here is the scene at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans after the Georgia win. Watch this on video. If you're listening on the audio version of our show, listen carefully for the chants of SEC coming from New Orleans here. So for me, as I said, that's a little bit of a surprise. You would think that Alabama fans would be too wrapped up in their own stuff. You know, we sort of think about this sometimes being a bit of a narcissistic fan base. You think they'd be too wrapped up in their kind of own situation to be happy for Georgia, but apparently that's what they were. Apparently they were happy for Georgia, and apparently they do take some pride in the ability, and at that point it would have been potential for Alabama, but the chance to be a part of an all-SEC national championship game. Now listen, here on Dog Nation Daily, and I know for the Alabama folks over at SEC Country as well, we're not going to be as focused in on the SEC versus SEC storyline and how the SEC compares to other conferences. That's for all the losers who are not playing for the national championship to worry about. For the two teams that are in the national championship, they're obviously going to be more focused on each other and how if you're Georgia, how you win this game, or if you're Alabama, how you hold off Georgia. That's going to be the bigger issue for us here on this show. It's not going to be how the SEC stacks up with the rest of the conferences, but clearly there's a bit of bragging rights associated with both teams in the national championship game being in the SEC, even an otherwise sort of lackluster bowl season. Two teams in the national championship, you can't hardly beat that. In fact, when Kirby Smart met with the media yesterday, when he sort of shared some of his opening thoughts on what he thinks about as he thinks towards the college football playoff national championship game on Monday, one of the things that he mentions is the idea that both these teams hail from the same league. Here's Georgia coach Kirby Smart.
Our transition is occurred kind of through the night. We were able to fly back last night after the game. Took some time getting out of LAX and got back into Atlanta and got the buses back over to Athens. Got a little nap in and then back to work today, beginning on what I know and respect is a really good football team in Alabama and looking forward to an opportunity to play for a national championship in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia. And I think it says a lot about our conference and the competitive nature of it for two teams to come together and to play that are from the same conference and have put themselves in a situation to do something really special.
So for me, I'm not as fixated right now on the fact that both Georgia and Alabama are from the SEC. I'm more fixated on, if Georgia's going to win a national championship, and I was actually on with our friends at 960 The Ref in Athens this morning, and I made this point on the radio program today, but if Georgia's going to win a national championship, and you want the kind of opponent that gives you sort of a leave-no-doubt mentality, if you want the kind of win that validates you more than any other could, beating Alabama is that. There is something about beating Alabama that is sort of its own national championship. It's almost just as coveted a victory over the Crimson Tide as a national championship trophy itself. So for me, that's what's more interesting here. Not the fact that both Georgia and Alabama from the SEC, but the fact that Georgia gets to finish its season by going up against the ultimate measuring stick in the sport and maybe getting a victory here over the Crimson Tide. That's what I think is sort of crucial and important. However, I will acknowledge something here, that there is a concern, I think, for Georgia, and a legitimate one. I don't think this is coach speak from Kirby Smart. I don't think this is the kind of thing that you just sort of worry about so you can have something to worry about. I think what Georgia went through, 54-48 against Oklahoma, you know, we've read the stories about this. We've rewatched the game on television, maybe. For those of you who were there, you've relived those memories. A lot of you kind of go on social media and you kind of find those, I think I'm almost like, you know, Zapruder film style fan videos. They're sort of shot in the stands. You're trying to watch as many of those as you can. I was shooting my own of like the Redcoat Band and stuff on Monday. You relive all of that. And the reason why you do is because there's so much emotion attached to it. But that emotion, while it was great to enjoy on Monday, becomes a little bit of a problem on Tuesday. When you're all bleary-eyed flying back to Georgia, the Georgia team, coaches and players themselves, all of a sudden that emotion becomes a little bit of a burden, because you got to be able to put that in your rearview mirror here and sort of reach down, grab something deep from the reservoir here, and kind of get up with that same level of emotion for the Alabama game on Monday. And believe it or not, that may be a little easier said than done. If you don't believe me, hear what Kirby Smart had to say about that.
Our team's really excited. Very emotional game last night, which concerns me, and talked to the players immediately afterwards about not burning any more energy or emotion on that game and moving on. Alabama had a little more sound victory, so they probably didn't burn quite as much emotion, although I know it was emotional to beat a team that beat them last year. And the focus moving forward will be on preparing for Alabama and what's a great program Coach Saban's got.
I mean, I don't think this is, you know, coach speak. I don't think this is whining. I don't think this is complaining. I think this is just something close to an objective fact. Alabama won a game in New Orleans and went back to Tuscaloosa. That's within the same time zone. That's central time zone to central time zone. That's a little easier. And Alabama, to its credit, also kind of handled Clemson in that game. There's a bit of ease with which Alabama kind of finishes off that and gets ready for the national championship game. Georgia obviously got all it wanted from Oklahoma. That was obviously the kind of, you know, barroom brawl that lasted right up until the final minute. You didn't know who was going to win that game. And I do think that that there is a part of Georgia that almost can't help but be left in Pasadena, California after something like that's over with, and you know, getting back, going on the practice field this week, getting that same edge, that same level of competition back. I do think it may take a little time. I think the plane flight's a long one. I think the emotion expended is real here. I think the short week, given the fact that you played on Monday, you're going to be playing again on Monday, you have the long travel time mixed into that. I think the emotional, physical injury recovery, the sort of typical stuff at the beginning of a football week, I think that's all made more difficult because of what Kirby just described there. So as we think about what Georgia is going to be doing in its preparation for the national championship, I think the short week, the emotion sort of laid on the line there in Pasadena, I think that's going to be a real part of this game here. But one way or another, obviously Georgia's probably going to figure this out and be just fine when it's all said and done. And frankly, the emotion that Georgia has coming off the Rose Bowl victory is well-earned here. I mean, we've all said this. We spent a good bit of time on yesterday's sort of special edition, slightly different episode of Dog Nation Daily from Los Angeles, one final time for us yesterday. We talked about how, you know, this is going to rank among the all-time great Rose Bowls, maybe the single greatest game in Georgia football history, you know, maybe even jumping ahead of things like Hobnail Boot and 1980 Georgia-Florida. You know, this Rose Bowl on the first day of 2018 may leap ahead of all of that. So the emotion that comes from this is a well-earned sense of emotion, and it probably doesn't happen the celebration, the joy, the happiness. You probably don't get that if it wasn't for a much different defensive performance from Georgia in the second half against the Sooners than it was in the first half. You know this, Baker Mayfield and Oklahoma moving the ball with ease in the game's first 30 minutes, basically getting anything that they wanted. The second half, it was a little bit more about the Georgia dominance and a little bit more like what Georgia fans would have sort of hoped to have seen for the entire game. Well, we finally got that in the second half. What made things different? When Kirby Smart met with the media yesterday to kind of set up the national championship game, here were his thoughts on why the final two quarters in the overtime were better for Georgia than the first two quarters had been.
We got more pressure. We called the game a little more aggressively. I thought the kids tackled a little better. We still didn't tackle real good in the second half, but it was better than we did in the first half. I really just think they settled down. You know, it's hard to put a finger on why they weren't settled early. I know you could say, well, it was the Rose Bowl. Well, it was Baker Mayfield. Yeah, we knew all that. And our team has got to play big in big moments and can't play what we call rat trap and have mental errors. And I thought in the first half, man, we had a lot of mental errors and just really not indicative of who we are defensively. And I thought they did a much better job of playing our style of defense. And it was not a lot of schematic changes as much as it was getting more comfortable with what Oklahoma was doing.
The one thing that Kirby Smart does not say there, which I think he could have said, was this is also a Georgia team that stayed patient. You know, it's easy to think in a first two quarters when Oklahoma's just moving the football, kind of punctuated by the double reverse, the throwback to Baker Mayfield, that sort of symbolic moment that Oklahoma was going to make it easy against Georgia that day. And it's easy to think in those moments that Georgia's never going to get a stop against Oklahoma. But the truth is, 60 minutes is actually kind of a long time. And there are lots of opportunities to get stops against Oklahoma. And Georgia stayed patient. And Kirby doesn't use that word there, but I think that there is a sense in which that word is pretty appropriate here. Georgia stayed patient defensively and started collecting stops later on in the second half. And at first it didn't seem like much, but it builds towards something. And all of a sudden, Georgia is getting after Mayfield, and I don't necessarily believe in momentum. I'm not sure that's a thing, but certainly there was the creation of something that looked an awful lot like momentum based on the way the Georgia defense was playing. So, challenges getting ready for Alabama here on what's kind of a short week. Still a lot of joy and happiness over the win against Oklahoma. I got to tell you, I am so excited to be back here in Atlanta for Dog Nation Daily. We're going to have a great, great week. Leading up to Monday, a national championship game. I mean, y'all, this is what we dreamed of when we started this program. A chance to have the kind of conversation like we're going to have this week. I am so glad to have you with us and look forward to doing a whole lot more with you in the days to come. So I will say that, as I say every day, that my name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. And Facebook Live, of course, you watched us in Los Angeles for the last few days. You see us back here in our home, as I said a few moments ago, kind of a home game for us here once again. I am really thankful to have Hannah Michael back in the room with me and be back home in our comfortable, friendly confines here. It's really good to be doing Dog Nation Daily with you once again from the place that we always do it and deliver the kind of show that we've come to expect here each and every day. Really, really fun there in that regard. By the way, I want to tell you about something else. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to have our Marlowe's Big Game Preview. We're going to be live at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven from 6 to 8 p.m. That's tomorrow. That's Thursday, January 1st, 6 to 8 p.m. Marlowe's in Brookhaven for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview. The address is, for those of you who are listening on our radio program or our podcast, 3575 Durden Drive. That's 3575 Durden Drive for the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. We're going to be there from 6 to 8 p.m. We're going to celebrate a Rose Bowl college football playoff win. We're going to look ahead at the Alabama Crimson Tide and talk about how Kirby Smart can become the first former Saban assistant to beat his old boss. That's going to be a great conversation. Welcoming in a special guest for that, former Georgia quarterback David Green, going to be with us there tomorrow night at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview. And by the way, David will be with us here in just a moment to offer a preview of the Big Game Preview tomorrow night, the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. So I hope you can make plans for that. I will also tell you this. It's time for our Simply Smarter Game Planning. It's brought to you by Aldi. And for our Simply Smarter Game Planning today, I want to take a look at something that Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports said. Dodd was actually a little critical of not Georgia's game plan, because Georgia wins the game, but the criticism coming from the Oklahoma side of things. Dodd says that Georgia got off easy. He says the best ever college football playoff semifinal should have at least still be going on. I don't know if he means all the way until now, but but maybe going on a little longer than it did. And Dennis Dodd says it probably should have ended in Oklahoma's favor. Forget Oklahoma blowing a 17-point lead or failing to adapt to Georgia's second-half adjustments. Georgia got off easy because Oklahoma coach Lincoln Riley got conservative late in the fourth quarter and overtime with the game in the balance when it counted most. And I actually don't necessarily agree with Dennis Dodd's assessment on all this. I think the better description of what happened here is not that that Lincoln Riley started doing something wrong. It's just sort of hard to score on every single drive. And, you know, the country wanted to turn Lincoln Riley into an offensive genius at the beginning of the game because Oklahoma's moving the football, and certainly he's a top-flight play caller, but he's never going to score every single time. And Georgia was going to score enough points to keep this thing close, and once Georgia found a way to start locking things down, obviously the chance of winning the game, you know, moved on and became a little more accessible there for Georgia. So the real issue here is the fact that Georgia stays patient. That was working in its favor, and I think that Dennis Dodd's assessment that Georgia got off easy because of a mistake by Lincoln Riley, I don't necessarily think that's the case. But that is our Simply Smarter Game Planning brought to you by Aldi, the home of Simply Smarter shopping. By the way, you can now get your groceries delivered via Instacart. Check that out, your local Aldi. Simply Smarter Shopping Aldi. They bring you the Simply Smarter Game Planning here on Dog Nation Daily. All right, I said this before. He was our former friend. Is he our enemy now? We'll find out as we welcome in the Alabama alumnus, Mike Johnson, here to Dog Nation Daily. And for the first time in a while here, I will say hello to my buddy and my partner from AT&T SEC Country Live. It has been a month of Sundays since he and I have hosted that show together. We'll look forward to being back together on that front soon, though. Mike, first of all, Happy New Year. Congratulations to your team, the Sugar Bowl victors, the Alabama Crimson Tide, earning a spot in the national championship game against Georgia. It is quite a moment for these two SEC schools, is it not?
It definitely is, man, and I think I'm like a lot of people that made the trip to New Orleans and Pasadena. I'm still shaking out the cobwebs, but I know you guys had a blast out there. I hope it was as awesome in Pasadena as I built it up to be, and I had a heck of a time down in New Orleans. It's just the Cinderella story continues for both of these teams.
Yeah, I said this at the top of the show today. My confession is I'm still trying to piece together all the big moments that happened in the game. I haven't had a chance to go back and rewatch the entire thing yet, and you know, you have these conversations and different, you know, moments, plays in the game pop up, and you're like, oh, yeah, that did happen. Oh, yeah, that was crucial in this game. And, you know, there's so many things you want to remember, especially in Georgia's game, because the game itself had a lot of plays, and a lot of them were consequential. But I'm sure you kind of feel the same way in the aftermath of, you know, trying to get back home and get settled in. For a lot of our audience, they're trying to get settled back into work on a day like this. In the aftermath of all that, remembering almost everything that happened is actually a pretty difficult thing to do.
It definitely is. Listen, I was trying to piece it back in my head this morning, and I think I'm like a lot of you guys. I was traveling back home yesterday, so it's not like you get on and watch a bunch of highlight shows or do any of that stuff. You know, I'm thinking back on Deron Payne's touchdown, the big man touchdown. I'm thinking back on Anthony Jennings' injury. You know, how did I'm running it back in my head. How did Jalen Hurts play, really? I mean, I was there celebrating the throws he made, but I wasn't living and dying with the ones he didn't. I think there's a lot of that going on. You know, checking the box scores, looking at, you know, rushing game statistics. A lot of eye-popping statistics out there in Pasadena. And, yeah, I just got to tell you a quick story. You know, I'm headed into the Superdome down there in New Orleans, and I can't tell you, I mean, everybody in line had these new, you know, Sling TV or YouTube TV apps on their phone, and everybody's holding up their smartphone so that everybody else behind them can watch the Rose Bowl as we wait through the security lines and head up into the stadium. And it was a heck of a scene. Everybody in line down at the security going into the Superdome is living and dying with every play that's happening out in Pasadena. It just an incredible night all around for college football and in particular the SEC.
I said this, that you are our former friend now turned enemy. Obviously, we don't think that's true. This game's not going to come between you and me. It's not. But I am excited about seeing our two teams kind of match up with each other on Monday. You mentioned those Sling TVs and all those apparatuses being used to watch the game. I mean, I'm sure you didn't get to see the entire game. I'm sure you saw some of the plays. But what was your overall thought about what you saw from Georgia on Monday?
Well, my first takeaway, you know, at halftime, I think, is when a lot of people started heading towards the direction of going in the Superdome for the Sugar Bowl. And I remember that there was some eye-popping stats on both sides. First of all, you know, the rushing yards for Georgia, not particularly at halftime, but definitely at the end of the game, you're looking there going, man, wow, that's a heck of a job. But then I did not expect Oklahoma to have as much of an effect with their rushing game. I think Anderson had about 200 yards rushing on the ground, and I thought at some point that Georgia's defense and their speed would show through, but you got to give credit to Oklahoma and what they were able to do with Lincoln Riley and Baker Mayfield. Their offense showed up in a big way, and I had no idea that game would turn into a shootout. I thought it would be more of a slugfest than a shootout, and probably I thought it would look more like the Alabama-Clemson game, but it was interesting to me the way in which Georgia won. You know, the fact that they're able to put their offense up against the reigning Heisman Trophy winner and come out victorious in a shootout style of a game is just something I don't think a lot of people expected, but I know Georgia fans will take it any way that it's going
to
come.
We talked earlier about something that Kirby Smart had said, and the funny thing is I'd actually been saying this to some people after Monday night before Kirby Smart even said this, that it's tough to get back up emotionally, that you play a game like that, it's one of the great games that's been played. You have to fly 3,000 miles back to the state of Georgia, and replenishing the stock of emotions, even with a national championship game, maybe a little easier said than done. As a former player, I mean, what is that process like? You played in the pre-playoff era, so you didn't have to do the back-to-back grind like Georgia's going to have to do this week, but you certainly know what emotional wins feel like. Is there a challenge in sort of, regenerating that energy here this week?
There's no doubt about that. Just plain and simple, it's tough to do. And that's one of the first things I thought about was Georgia. Listen, I'm assuming they stayed the night out there and they wake up the next morning and they fly home and they get a day off to replenish. But this is not like coming back from the Rose Bowl in the way I did. I was coming back bringing a championship trophy. We were coming back with a national title. And here you have this team that's got to fly all the way back across the country. And I've never had that long of a flight or that big of a turnaround coast to coast. But, you know, what I did deal with was big games where, you know, we were pitted as the top team in the country and go through emotional victories. You know, we beat LSU down in Death Valley in overtime 1 week, and we turned around the next weekend and we weren't very good. And I think it's up to Kirby Smart. I think it's great for Georgia fans that Kirby Smart knows the route to get through these things. He knows how to deal with issues like this now because he's been through that before. But it's going to be up to these players and up to the leadership to make sure everybody's doing small things. Cold tubbing, going in there and make sure you're getting extra film work because these guys are going to be tired. There's going to be some jet lag. There's going to be some hangover. And I think it's up to these guys to mentally grind through it and understand the opportunity that lies in front of them.
So I don't want to get lost in this subject because we got a lot about this upcoming game I want to deal with. But Kirby did say something back in L.A. this past week that I thought was kind of interesting, that when y'all went out there in 2009 – y'all didn't stay in downtown L.A., but Georgia obviously did. And I was at that team hotel a couple times because I had friends and family that were staying there. Let me tell you something. That place was a madhouse. I mean, and obviously the festivities all week long, whether it be the Beef Bowl or the trip to Disneyland, that's all just, it's a sideshow. It's a circus tent. I mean, it's crazy. Why didn't y'all stay in L.A. and do a lot of that kind of stuff? Oh, was it because it was a BCS title game? I mean, how did you, I guess, avoid doing some of the same stuff that Georgia did this past week?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I think that obviously there was a big reason behind it with Coach Saban, and we stayed at two different sites. I'm not sure how Georgia did this past week. We stayed near the place we were practicing out there, which was Orange Coast College. We stayed there for 5 nights, I believe, right near there, near the mall, and then we moved up the night before just to get even further away from everything. We ended up staying, I think, out in, Glendale, California, or something like that, right up near Pasadena. And so it's definitely a tough task. And listen, I think that Kirby Smart will tell you that's one of the great things that he's been through it. But being able to keep that focus, and listen, you know, I mentioned it a bunch of times on this show and on SC Country Live that in New Orleans, you worry about guys going down to Bourbon Street and doing all these things. Well, it's a little bit more spread out in California.
Yeah.
So we had to find ways to try to keep our mind off of going out and searching for stuff. You know, it was like, hey, we're going to go walk through the mall, maybe get dinner at Applebee's, and I'm going to be in bed at 9 o'clock. And I think that's one of the great things about going out to California, like I mentioned before. And like you said, though, the tough turnaround and getting all those things squared away is what's up next.
Well, I think I speak for all Georgia fans when I say if Georgia players were doing something other than going to bed by 9 p.m., I don't want to know. And if they were able to keep that a secret, then good for them, I guess. Turning our attention back to Monday, though, you know this stat. It's going to be cited 9 million times. No former Saban assistants ever beaten Nick Saban. For me, this is about the fact that almost no coach beats Nick Saban. I don't put any extra stock in the fact that former Saban assistants haven't done it because Saban's record against virtually all coaches is essentially undefeated because of how good Alabama's been. Am I right or wrong to not put any extra emphasis on the part about it being former Saban assistants?
I think you're definitely right about not putting any extra emphasis because I don't know that Nick Saban's really played any assistant coaches that have had teams quite like Georgia has right now. And I think in a lot of different ways in the front seven on the offensive line, it's going to be like looking at mirror images for each other. Obviously, a couple of different dynamics on the offensive side of the ball, but I don't put any stock in it. And honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if Kirby actually is the one that has the upper hand here. He knows some of these players on this team. He knows, you know, what Nick Saban's defense does. Nick Saban, looking back across the way, he doesn't know that much about Georgia's team. You know, he hasn't played these guys. He doesn't know them personally. So I'm with you. I don't know that I put a ton of stock in the whole assistant thing. I think there's a ton of storylines to take into this game. But that one just, for some reason to me and most Alabama fans I've talked to, just doesn't carry much weight. I think that everybody has a healthy respect for what Kirby Smart is as a coach. And at some point, there's going to be an assistant that beats Nick Saban. I think Kirby Smart has as good a chance as anybody to do it Monday night.
I didn't get to see the entire Sugar Bowl. We were still doing a lot of our post-game coverage from Pasadena, so I didn't get to see every play. But what I did get to see, let me deal with a couple of issues that were concerning for me, from obviously speaking from the Georgia perspective here. Looks like those Alabama linebackers that are returning to health have this Alabama defense looking more like an Alabama defense again. Is that your perspective on that too?
It definitely is. I think the return of Mac Wilson was a big deal. I think that Alabama's defensive line might have had their best game of the year, honestly, when you talk about just sheer preparation. It is tough. I don't know if you caught it this morning. Anthony Jennings had to announce that he won't be playing in the national title game, underwent surgery. He got hurt kind of that garbage time mop-up duty second half in the Sugar Bowl. So that's definitely a tough loss, just adds to the mounting ability. I thought he had one of his best games. But when you talk about guys like Terrell Lewis, when you talk about guys like Christian Miller and Mac Wilson, being able to return from some of those injuries, it was a huge deal. Mac Wilson has become the signal caller. He's the, you know, it was Sean Deion Hamilton, then it was Dylan Moses, and now you're kind of, it's a combo between Mac Wilson and Rashawn Evans. I can't understate it. It's a huge deal for this team to be able to have those guys back flying around because of the knowledge base that they have. Because you can see the preparation, even when there were misdirections, even when Clemson was trying to catch Alabama's defense off guard. There were guys flying around. There were guys near the ball. They were not taken off guard by anything, and I think that's because they're starting to get some of these players back healthy that have been through the rigors of some of these games.
The other thing that's concerning for me is the Alabama offensive line, which, I mean, it's certainly been an above-average offensive line, one of the better ones in the country, but by Alabama standards, maybe this year, it had not been what I would have thought of as a truly dominant Alabama offensive line. But the Clemson defensive line is the best in the country, and Alabama's offensive line held them and handled them fine on a Monday. That's a little bit of a concern for a Georgia fan that all of a sudden this Alabama offensive line looks like what you would expect a tied offensive line to look like.
Yeah, I definitely did, and I thought they played well. And the game plan kind of went similar to what I thought they did. And I thought Brian Daboll, honestly, I think at times he has not been very opportunistic in terms of his play calling. I thought that at times you get kind of what everybody knows what's coming. But I thought he did a great job of sticking to the run. That was one of my main sticking points going into this game. I want to see guys like Damian Harris get the ball, Bo Scarborough get the ball. I think when Damian Harris did get the ball in the first half, you're able to see what he's able to do between the tackles and allow this offensive line to go to work so that you're not leaving this offensive line in third and longs. And I thought they did a great job of staying on schedule for the most part. You didn't ask Jalen Hurts to do a ton on third and long, third and 15. He did make some plays with his legs, but I'm with you. I thought Alabama's push up front was a big deal. They lost Lester Cotton in the second half. Still waiting to hear whether or not he'll be able to play this coming week. But J.C. Hasenauer takes over for him. He's a senior and he's a good lineman as well. So I thought it was a good performance. Obviously, going to be going up against another quality front in Georgia this Monday, and I think it makes for a heck of a showdown for sure.
Here's where I think Georgia's got an opportunity, though, and you know I'm a broken record on this, but you know what I saw from Jalen Hurts, I think, as objective as I can be, Mike, I think that's also still concerning. I guess he is like offensive player of the game or whatever, but I mean this is still a guy that's misfiring on some throws and misfiring on some opportunities, and you know, I think the Alabama wide receivers are a potential mismatch in favor of the Tide, but I just don't know that Jalen Hurts is going to be able to deliver them the football. If I'm thinking about reasons why Georgia might win this game, for me, Jalen Hurts is a check in Georgia's box here. How do you feel about that?
I think that's definitely a fair assessment, and I don't think there's any Alabama fan that looks at it and says he's the offensive player of the game that, you know, feels really great about that. I think what was in the positive side of that column for Alabama fans, at least, you saw Jalen Hurts having other targets in the Sugar Bowl. And obviously, you know, I don't think you got to catch much of it, but, you know, he was targeting Irv Smith, and he was targeting, obviously, big man Deron Payne. You had balls thrown to Robert Foster. It wasn't just the Calvin Ridley show that we've seen in the past. I thought he did a great job of trying to disperse the ball. You know, Damian Harris catches the ball. Bo Scarborough catches the ball. You try to get the ball to some of these wide receivers that are very good and allow them to make plays in open space. I thought he missed a couple receivers. The accuracy was questionable at times. There was an underthrown ball and a possible flea flicker that Calvin Ridley must have had 15 yards behind him to the nearest DB. And that one gets broken up. But I don't think he played awfully. There wasn't any glaring mistakes from him, but it's still a challenge in the passing game for Alabama to really be efficient there down in and down out. I think, you know, for the first time this year, Alabama was really close to 50% on third down conversions, which I think is a big deal. But I still don't know if they've arrived in the passing game. I think it's going to be a big deal for them to try to get on the board first by running the football.
Then the other thing, Mike, and I think for our video audience, we'll show some of the video that got captured on Twitter of this, of Nick Saban and Brian Daboll having some words there. You know, Saban kind of giving one of those chewings to Daboll, the way that Lane Kiffin certainly became famous for being on the receiving end of those. And I'll admit what I'm about to say to you here may be a bit of wishful thinking coming from the Georgia side of things, but you know, at the beginning of the season, I was concerned about how Daboll was going to fit in as replacement for Lane Kiffin. Mike, I think back to a year ago when I thought that Saban micromanaged the Alabama offense a little too much going to that Clemson game. Now, obviously, Dable's not going to be replaced here going into Monday, but is there any fear on the Alabama side that the sort of dissatisfaction and anger that Saban briefly showed towards Daboll there is an example of him kind of meddling in the offense a little too much again, much like maybe happened last year heading into the Clemson game for the national championship?
I'll be honest with you, B.A., I don't even think it's been a thought in most people's minds so far. Maybe as we start to break down this game a little bit more and understand the ins and the outs, you hear stuff like that. But this is the reason assistants don't talk in the media, you know, the reason that Kirby Smart has employed a lot of the same philosophies. And this is something Nick Saban's been known for. Lane Kiffin got it. Doug Nussmeier got it. I saw Jim McElwain get it a few times where, you know what, as hard as Nick Saban is on the players, as much as he expects out of those guys, he's even harder on the coaching staff and expects just as much out of those guys. And I think it's all about preparation to understand where you're at. And I think Brian Daboll, listen, he coached for Bill Belichick, so I think he understands kind of how that works. And I think that obviously it'll become a working relationship if it wasn't already. But they have to listen. I think that Nick Saban was right in the way he did it. I think that Brian Daboll, had some mishandling of the offense at times. So I don't find it to be a storyline, a big storyline for anybody moving forward. And it's just one of those things that you deal with time in and time again from Nick Saban. I think that a lot of Alabama fans respect the fact that, hey, you know what? I'm not going to let these assistant coaches just do whatever they want. I'm going to hold them to a high standard too. And it's just something Alabama fans have learned to see.
All right, here's the story. I will not be at SEC Country Live today. I think you are back today. I'm looking forward to being back with you, though, as a part of a Thursday show as we get ready to preview the national championship. That is going to be a lot of fun, Mike. These two great programs and a great, great build-up for this game here coming up on Monday. I can't wait to be a part of it with you.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one, man. And I usually end these great Wednesday interviews with Dog Nation by saying good luck this weekend. I'm going to refrain from that one today, BA. I think we'll let this one be decided on the field, and all luck will be handed over later.
That is fair enough, Mike. It's good of you to join us, though. We appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure, buddy.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, listen, Mike may be an Alabama guy, but he's a good sport about all this. We always enjoy having him here today and every week here on Dog Nation Daily, and fun to kind of build up towards the Alabama game. And the way these two teams match up with each other, I think it's going to be really fascinating. By the way, a little less than 5 minutes from right now, we're going to talk to former Georgia quarterback David Green, not only to get Green's thoughts on what happened for Georgia in the Rose Bowl, but also to preview what's going to happen tomorrow for our Marlowe's big game preview. We'll be there from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. David's going to be with us for that. We will talk to him about that coming up in just a couple moments. By the way, if you're listening to us, the address, once again, 3575 Durden Drive in Brookhaven for our Marlowe's big game preview, 6 to 8 p.m. tomorrow. I'll also remind you the Dog Nation Daily is brought to you in part by our friends at Kroger. And if you're getting ready for a big watch party on Monday, you want that party platter for the game, well, check out Kroger.com for that, because you're going to get big savings on your party platter to get ready for the game. Everything you need for celebrating the big one on Monday, you can find at your local Kroger. For more information, as I said, you can check out Kroger.com on that. If you're planning on going to the game, I know some of the big talk is the expensive ticket prices. I guess we've heard as high as $2,600 just to get in. I know that Darren Rovell over at ESPN had tweeted out that the one of the ticketing sites had gotten crashed. because there had been so much interest and so much immediate rush on the part of Georgia fans to seek out these tickets right at the moment that that Georgia punched its ticket, no pun intended, to the national championship game, that the ticketing site's website crashed. I think that there's a lot of hype about this. And by the way, if you're watching the video, you can actually see an example on the screen of the website crashing there because of the ticket demand. But my advice would be, and obviously you should consult your own financial advisor here for the situation that fits you best. These things are fact dependent after all. But I would encourage you to wait. If you're planning on going to the game, and honestly, if you're watching us right now, you want to weigh in this in the comment section, or if you want to hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, let me know your thoughts on this. From a strategic standpoint, do you really think they're going to go higher than $2,600? I mean, are they going to be $5,000? I mean, people don't have that kind of walking around money. I mean, first of all, I don't know how some of us are going to survive, given this Rose Bowl trip was not cheap. Notre Dame was not cheap. SEC championship tickets, they were expensive. And now you're talking about all-time, you know, high watermark of expense for a national championship game ticket. I mean, listen, money's getting a little tight for a lot of us, I believe, after all of this. And I certainly know that it is for me right now. But my advice, and I mean this to the people who are definitely thinking they want to go, people who say, you know what, I definitely want to be there. My advice would be wait just a little bit. Because the media gets everything wrong, right? And what the media hypes up off the top ends up being a little less true when it's all said and done. My guess is the national championship game tickets will be pretty expensive. But my guess is that they might come down a little bit by the time you get there. At least I would hope so. So you can decide for yourself on that, but I might advise you to wait just a little bit. I thought it was interesting that Alabama defensive back Tony Brown, reflecting on the Sugar Bowl, the game that Alabama wins that punches its ticket to play Georgia on Monday, sounds like if Brown's representative of the rest of the Alabama team, they may have a little bit of a problem with Dabo Swinney here. What Brown says is, he says, I love Dabo for all the ammunition he gave this team. He gave this team a lot of ammunition to come play this game and ready to dominate every play. Told us we weren't ready. Told us they weren't worthy of being a top 14. Look, that's what happens when you talk trash to us. We're going to show you. Now, my understanding, in case I'm wrong here, and I have been in California, but the only trash that they talked was Dabo just voted Ohio State above Alabama in the poll. That's all this was. It wasn't any kind of anything more sinister than that. Dabo just ranked Ohio State against ahead of Alabama, which is not an unreasonable opinion, but that is all it took for Tony Brown to get fired up, which just proves once again that Alabama is just like Georgia. They will use everything they can to their advantage. Was Georgia using at halftime the fact that Baker Mayfield had given the throat slash gesture and said the game was over? We know Georgia well enough to know that's probably the case, and clearly Georgia was motivated by that at the end of the game, and Alabama's going to do the same kind of stuff, and so it'll be that kind of, I guess, mental chess match between the two teams on Saturday, or I should say Monday as well. Bill Hancock, the college football playoff CEO, essentially, says that, with two SEC teams in the playoff and UCF going undefeated and on the outside looking in, that he doesn't see any change coming in the college football playoff anytime soon. But that's the kind of controversy that's going to kind of, you know, sort of unravel here a bit. When you've got two SEC teams in, some folks are going to be wondering, hey, should we expand this thing out to make room for more teams around the rest of the country? But Hancock says for now he likes the playoff just the way it is. We'll make that our SEC through. And we'll get ready to transition now to a guy that's going to be good enough to join us tomorrow for our Dog Nation big game preview at the Marlows in Brookhaven. It is the former Georgia quarterback David Green. And David, first of all, let me say I'm so excited about having you with us tomorrow night at the Marlows in Brookhaven. And David, I think you're going to see a fired up bunch of Dog fans who are thrilled about not just the Rose Bowl victory, but a matchup against Alabama. This is a pretty special time to follow the red and black, is it not?
Brandon, I tell you, it's amazing. I mean, my voice, I'm still just trying to get it back from the game. I started thinking, I was like, am I crazy? Because I could barely sleep the other night after that game. I was so excited, and it was such an emotional roller coaster. It felt like the game was 10 hours long. But I tell you, you know, the way the game started out, if you were in the room that we were in, we had about six families. We were over at a buddy's house. You know, you kind of start out watching game like normal. By the end of that game, we looked like a bunch of hoodlums out there jumping around and, you know, yelling and screaming and the whole deal. And the kids were going nuts. it was the most fun I've ever had watching a football game, and probably the most nerve-wracking. I'll tell you, as a player, it's not near as gut-wrenching because you're playing, but as a fan, it is like torture having to sit there and watch some of these games.
So, David, we had Mike Johnson on a moment ago, and I said this to him, and I said this off the top of our show as well. It's almost difficult for me to catalog everything that happened in the game. I'm still trying to piece together my thoughts. I mean, as a former player, if you had to sum up, you know, fairly succinctly why Georgia won, what made the second half different from the first, what was your overall sort of simple takeaway as what led to a dog victory there?
Well, I think getting that field goal before half was huge because it at least felt like we had a chance to get back into the game. Now, we had a lot of work, and we had to kick off to them. Whatever adjustments they made at halftime, when we came out and held them to 2-3 and outs, and then we marched the ball down and scored, it's a totally different game. And we had the momentum. But the thing that was so impressive to me, really on both sides, both with Georgia and Oklahoma, is that momentum went back and forth a number of times in that second half. And the thing that I think most fans don't realize that players do, it's so hard to flip the momentum when you're on the losing end of it. I mean, you got to go out and you got to make a play when the other team really has all the juice and everything going. And both teams were able to step up and just keep making big plays after big play. I mean, it was so fun to watch, and it was just, I think everybody was on the edge of the seats because right when you thought you had the momentum and you were about to take it and run with it, the other team made a huge play.
Yeah.
And the momentum swung. So I'm just not used to, and I think most people just aren't used to seeing the momentum go back and forth that many times.
And obviously, as a former quarterback, I would imagine you've got to be impressed with what you've seen from Jake Fromm. I mean, his poise and the degree to which that he doesn't allow these moments to be too big for him, I continue to be impressed by it, even though he finds a sort of a way to up the ante on that every single week. I mean, how much do you love what Jake Fromm's doing right now?
It's amazing, to be honest with you. And I almost think, when we mention him being a freshman, it's almost doing him a disservice because he's playing great football regardless if he's a freshman or a senior. And you can tell he's just a guy – he just wins, and and the thought of failure I don't think has ever crossed his mind, and it's so fun to watch a guy when he just competes. And the thing that you love is when he steps out on the field, you know what you're going to get, and as a quarterback, that's what you want. You want to know that you got a guy that's going to get out there, he's just going to keep grinding regardless if he goes out there and throws a pick on the first possession or if he throws a touchdown pass. He's going to keep going out there and grinding, just trying to win the game. And, I mean, it just shows, you know, how selfless he is as well. That last play of the game, you know, Sony Michel's out there wide. He's over there blocking. You know, it's just kind of that whatever it takes mentality to get the job done. And it's impressive to watch. His mental makeup is definitely his best attribute. I mean, he's a heck of a talent. He's a great football player. But you can tell the guys love to play for him, and you can tell he's got that makeup where he's just going to go out there and grind. And honestly, I've been around some of the best quarterbacks, the Bradys, the Mannings. I played with them, you know, my little stint in the NFL. Yeah. And the thing that separates the great ones from the average ones are the ones that want to compete every day, and they just can't stand losing, and they want to win. And this kid's got that kind of mental makeup.
All right, quick final thought from you. Obviously, the challenge of Alabama is a real one. I mean, I thought that Alabama – I didn't get to see the entire game against Clemson because I was in Pasadena and kind of wrapping up some of our post-game coverage. But what I did see, I saw an Alabama team that was very much in keeping with some of the better ones of the last few years here. This is a game I believe that Georgia can win, but the Crimson Tide is certainly a formidable foe, is it not?
I'm telling you, Alabama – I think Alabama's a lot better than what people think because most people, when they think of Bama this year, they think of the way they were playing at the end of November – when they were just decimated. Their linebacker, I've never seen a linebacker crew get decimated quite like they have. But I'll say this, their front seven and the players and the talent and the depth that they have is unbelievable. I mean, we're certainly going to have our hands full. I think offensively, Jake Fromm is going to have to play unbelievable in this game because I guarantee you Nick Saban, every coach, you know, we talk about it every week, every coach is going to try to take away the running game. Well, if there's any team that's capable of stopping our run, it's going to be Alabama. And I guarantee you they're going to load up the box and they're going to commit to stopping. They're going to make Jake and Wims and Godwin, we're going to make some of those guys are going to have to make plays to beat us. He's not going to let Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, they're not going to play a two-safety look and just let those guys just run wild. So Jake's going to have a huge game, and I think Wims and Godwin are going to have chances to really step up and make some big plays.
All right, tomorrow night, 6 to 8 p.m., Marlowe's in Brookhaven. David, Marlowe's in Brookhaven's always popping with a lot of Georgia fans. It's going to be a really fun night tomorrow. 3575 Durden Drive. I'm excited about having you there for it. Can't wait to talk to you in person about these dogs. Thanks for being with us for it.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, buddy. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Good stuff there from former Georgia quarterback David Green. Always great to have him on Dog Nation Daily, and great to have him tomorrow night as well. Also great to think about 297 days from right now. Georgia maybe is the reigning national champions. Gets a victory over the Florida Gators. Good Georgia fans are Gator haters first and foremost. And 297 days from right now, we're going to get another victory for the Dogs over the Florida Gators. We do it every single day. The Gator Hater Countdown here on Dog Nation Daily. Let me also close the show by saying this. Special thanks I want to give out to the folks at the Tournament of Roses. The hospitality that they showed for the Rose Bowl is really unmatched. And I had a chance to talk to some of their officials before I flew out of L.A. Last night. And I told them, look, here in the South, we obviously think we invented college football. We obviously are pretty proud of our own traditions. But way out there, out West, they're doing a great job of being stewards for the sport with the Rose Bowl. I was honored to have been a part of it, and I appreciate their hospitality making it so fun. See you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.